Eisenman. Court will proceed to the third case of the day, Nagel versus the Village of Calumet Park. Okay, Mr. Goldman.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jonathan Goldman. I represent William Nagel in this case. I'd like to discuss three issues today. The first is that Mr. Nagel was deprived of his First Amendment rights with regard to his employment. He was subjected to discrimination on the basis of race and age. And finally, that he was subjected to retaliation for opposing unlawful discrimination. With regard to the First Amendment issues, this deals with a situation that occurred around May 12, 2004. On May 12, 2004, he engaged in protected speech. On May 17, 2004, one of the defendants, Chief Davis, made some disparaging remarks towards him about his speech that he had made on May 12th. And on May 19th, Mr. Nagel was disciplined. He was suspended for 2 days for an unrelated matter. And I want to back up a second. In order to establish a First Amendment violation, the plaintiff must show that his speech was constitutionally protected, that he was deprived, he suffered a deprivation likely to deter free speech, and his speech was at least a motivating factor in the action taken against him. With regard to the first point, that his speech was constitutionally protected, the plaintiff spoke out as a citizen as opposed to speaking out on his own behalf. And this is clear because, as in the Garcetti line of cases, he spoke out as a person from outside of the scope of his duties. He was a citizen. And this is clear because he was in the guise of a union member in bringing these incidents to the attention of the chief.
Well, isn't the big hurdle you face here that none of his statements were ever made public?
Your Honor, I
because this was just basically a closed meeting, talking about the conditions there, the working hours, that kind of thing, of the union members. But nobody was there, no press, no one else knew about it.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true, that no one else heard about it, that it was this small group. But that doesn't prevent him from having his speech protected by the First Amendment. He spoke out, and the people that were within this group were the people that could have done something about it and were affected by his speech.
This whole idea of public employees' free speech rights, it's a situation where a police officer goes to some public meeting and talks about problems in the police department, that's arguably protected on the First Amendment. But at a small meeting within a department, I don't know how that can be ever viewed as protected free speech.
Your Honor, we've addressed this in our brief, and I will rely on the points in the brief, but I want to emphasize that the importance of being able to speak out in front of any size group is what the Constitution should provide for. And in this situation, he spoke out to the people that had an interest in this. Whether he spoke to the public at large, people uninterested in this conduct or in this speech.
Well, theoretically, the public could be very interested because if there are less officers on the street, that's less protection. But the bottom line is you don't have any authority to support your position, really, that, you know, because it was a closed meeting. It wasn't made public. You don't really have any authority on point, do you, to support your position? This particular circumstance where he's the union rep, he's talking to his people there, as well as some of the hierarchy of the department.
That is true. I'm not aware of an analogous case that's just like that. But it is similar to the Gustafson case out of Wisconsin, in which an officer spoke out with regard to how the department was handling the investigation of a particular case.
And he spoke out to who?
Well, that was a situation where there was a speech that was made to the public at large.
Right.
This case, Your comment brought up another point, and that is that his speech should have been protected because of the manner in which the content of the speech that he made, and that was his criticism was of the number of officers out on the street, how that impacted the safety of the officers that were on the street, as well as the safety of the citizens of the town.
Isn't that just a normal discourse that would occur perhaps in any department faced, let's say, at a given time with an increased volume of incidents that they address?
Yes, Your Honor, that is something.
Every time that kind of discussion occurs in a squad room, would that be a protected speech?
Your Honor, it should be protected speech. This is a public employee. He spoke out on what he believed would protect the citizens of the town to the people that could have made a change in this. And as a direct result of that, he was reprimanded orally a few days later about how he did make this speech, and the existence of the chief's animosity against him because of this was exhibited. And then 2 days after that, he was disciplined for alleged sick time abuse that last occurred in September of 2003, almost 6 months before. That's the causal connection aspect of this, that he engaged in the speech, and the chief may have had an interest in trying to prevent him from speaking out in this way, but instead he went ahead and disciplined him for something totally unrelated as a retaliatory manner. I next want to address the issues of discrimination on the basis of race and age. And this is with regard to an incident that happened in November of 2004 where he was given a 3-day suspension for allegedly failing to assist a sergeant in an incident that took place in August of 2004. And we are able to prove this is a age and race-based discrimination because of the direct evidence that encompasses the circumstances that occurs in this environment that he worked in. There were a number of race and age-based comments that were made over a period of time by the actors involved. When the chief first began working for the department, he made a comment to Mr. Nagel about asking him when he was going to retire, as though he was already too old to be doing the job.
Didn't that occur at a retirement party?
It occurred at a retirement party. That's
context there about, isn't there always that kind of discussion? I mean, when are you going to retire? Judge Evans is regularly asking me that.
I'm not the only one. Cops always talk about retirement. Boy, I've only got 5 more years to go, and I'm out of here. And that's just common police talk.
That may be, if it was an isolated incident, that might be the case, but this same chief often was heard to have made comments in referring to Mr. Nagel and his peers as those old white MFs. He made that on numerous occasions in front of the assistant chief, the commander, and a particular officer, Jerry Wilson Spearman, who testified about that. Another member of the police department, Commander Davis, who is basically the third line of authority at the department, in deciding who was going to be interviewed for some new opening positions, marked next to an individual's name age and a question mark. And in his deposition, he explained that he wondered if the board who was going to be making the decision would be interested in a candidate who was over the age of 50 already. And then when it came time to actually hire these lateral candidates, the majority were far younger than the plaintiff, and all but one was a white individual. And also in the fall of 2005, the same Commander Davis wrote a memo to Sergeant Jones, who is an older white sergeant. And when Commander Davis was removing Sergeant Jones from a firearms instructor position, he indicated the administration must start investing in our officers who believe in the current leadership and that can give this department another 20 to 30 years of positive service. This is the environment in which this situation was happening, and because of that, these incidences clearly, or this particular incident in August of 2004, was within this environment where age and race were addressed on a common basis and signify that that may have had a role. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Is that pronounced Bruck? Okay. Ms. Bruck?
May it please the court, counsel. The first issue that I want to address is that this appeal is regarding a summary judgment that was entered against on behalf of all of the defendants. There is no evidence at all that there was any act of retaliation done in violation of the First Amendment by Mayor Porch, by Assistant Chief Rocket, by Commander Mel Davis, or by Sergeant Rigoni. There's simply no evidence in the record that any of those individuals did anything whatsoever to Mr. Nagel that would violate the First Amendment. They should not be in this case. The summary judgment in their favor should be affirmed. That leaves us with allegations against Chief Davis. What exactly did Chief Davis do that retaliated against Mr. Nagel for his First Amendment rights? The only claim is that on May 19, 2004, that Mr. Nagel received a two-day suspension for violating the department's sick day policy. The evidence is in the record, though, that when Chief Davis took office, he instituted a policy that if you call in sick the day before or the day after your scheduled day off, then you are going to get some type of progressive discipline that violates the department's policy. And again, the discipline is progressive. So what happens here? We have approximately 9 months before Mr. Nagel allegedly speaks out. He calls in sick before or after his day off. He admits that. He receives a two-day suspension. Now you have the May 19, 2004 incident where, again, he calls in sick the day before or the day after, admits that. There's progressive discipline, so he's going to receive discipline that's more than 2 days. He gets he got 1 day initially. Now he gets 2 days. And then you have a situation where, again, now almost a year later, calls in sick again, violates the policy, receives a five-day suspension. Interestingly enough, he files grievances on that, never serves any of these suspensions. It's Mr. Nagel's burden to show that there's a causal connection between his speaking out and his receiving these suspensions. He admits violating the rules, and there's no causal connection because anyone in the department who violates that rule receives the same type of discipline that he receives. In fact, the evidence is clear in the record that over half the department has received discipline for violating that rule. There's no causal connection.
That's the reason for the rule, I guess.
Pardon me?
I suppose that's the reason for the rule. People are calling in sick the day before, the day after a leave.
Exactly.
Spend their time off.
Exactly. And in fact, where Mr. Nagel is claiming that this is retaliatory, there is an easy way for him to avoid being disciplined for this. Don't call in sick the day before, the day after your day off, then you're not going to be disciplined. So it's his burden to show that he suffered some type of deprivation that's likely to deter free speech. All he has to do is not call in sick before or after his day off. He's not going to be disciplined.
Of course, if someone was legitimately sick and they provided a doctor's note, that would avoid the discipline, wouldn't it?
That did. And in fact, the evidence in the record is that there was an employee, Jerry Wilson Spearman, who had a serious medical condition, qualified under FMLA, and was given FMLA leave. Mr. Nagel points to her as his alleged comparator, saying she was treated more favorably than him, when in fact the department was required under the FMLA to give this officer time off and not discipline her for that. The age discrimination and the Title VII claims are, initially there's an attempt to proceed under the direct method of evidence. The direct method requires a convincing mosaic, not a few random stray remarks that really are neither convincing nor shown to have any temporal relationship to anything that took place with respect to Mr. Nagel's employment. As the court pointed out, it's very common for officers to talk about retirement. That's something that generally happens. And the comment was made over 2 years before any incident that Mr. Nagel is complaining of. The claims that were supposedly made about the old white MFers, we don't know when they were made. We don't know if they were made close in time to any particular act that Mr. Nagel is complaining of. That's his burden to show that. He's failed to do so. There's also no evidence in the record that younger or non-white employees were treated more favorably. There are some allegations made that are unsupported, that are not of evidentiary quality. There's simply not enough in the record to show that there was discrimination. Under the indirect method, Mr. Nagel is not in a protected class for his race claim. He hasn't shown that the department has any desire or they've made any effort to discriminate against white officers. In fact, the evidence shows that there are white officers, including the assistant chief of police and all of the sergeants, who are white. And there's simply just no evidence showing retaliation. There's simply no evidence, and the court was correct in granting summary judgment to the defendants. And if there's no questions, we would respectfully request that the decision be affirmed.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Golden?
With regard to the retaliation, there is significant evidence of Title VII type retaliation in addition to the items that I had mentioned before. And we're able to show that through both direct circumstantial evidence and indirect evidence. And I'll point out to the issues that show the circumstantial evidence. In order to do that, a plaintiff shows that he engaged in statutorily protected activity, which he did when he filed a charge of discrimination on January 19, 2005, February 23, 2005, and on May 9, 2005. He also has to show that he suffered a materially adverse action. And that, of course, has been modified by the recent decision in the U.S. Supreme Court, which adopted the way that the Seventh Circuit had been handling that. But those incidences included a 3-day suspension that was given on February 11th for allegedly preparing a grievance while on duty. He was assigned to a position called a senior liaison position in March of 2005, and this was just after he filed a charge of discrimination for age discrimination. He was issued a 5-day suspension on April 23rd for alleged sick leave abuse. He had his court key date changed, which he had had for 27 years. He had that changed on May 10th, 2005. And in the fall of 2005, he was assigned to a fixed post, basically acting as a security guard at a local strip mall. The timing of these things and the various comments that the chief and commander made with regard to how they felt about individuals protecting their interests and preserving their rights is indicative and shows a pattern of trying to retaliated against people because of the way they oppose things. And in particular, Chief Davis had made a remark in early January 2005 about how he objected to the grievances that Mr. Nagel was filing in his capacity as a union steward. And a Commander Davis had issued a memo in the summer of 2005 where he said, if all frontline supervisors begin to adequately discipline by way of corrective action, recommending suspensions and terminations, etc., the flow of frivolous grievances would decrease tremendously. And Judge Connelly had identified that as being sort of a smoking gun in terms of the discriminatory or the retaliatory mindset of the administration. One issue that has come up is that these incidences may not rise to the level of an adverse action which would make them actionable under Title VII discrimination, race, and age. But because of the lighter standard for retaliation type Title VII claims, they certainly are the kinds of things that would deter an individual from either filing a charge in the first place or supporting a charge if one was made. It was, for instance, the raceway detail. This was something that when you're a police officer, your job is to arrest people and to monitor the village that you work for and make sure everything looks right. And he was unable to do that in the raceway detail. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will...